Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome,
maybe,
Manny.
Yeah, well, maybe future sheriff.
Maybe future sheriff.
We
need some fresh blood in there, man.
Yeah, I've been trying to be mayor all this time. Right? Maybe I should go a little lower.
Barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, the sheriff, man.
Right. Well, you don't have as many eyes on you, obviously. You get to kind of do whatever you want over there, your little fiefdom.
Yeah, our Sheriff Hudson is on the hot seat right now.
Yeah.
Sheriff Hot Seat, they should call
her. Sure.
She's an idiot. She had so much promise, too. I remember when she got elected. We were like, hey, man. Because we had Gussman, remember?
Marlon Gussman ran it for many, many years. She was a monitor. Originally Hudson for years, and then was a critic reformer keeping an eye on him, and then she ran and unseated him.
Right.
And the very next year when Mardi Gras came around, they caught him using the sheriff's office credit cards to rent a bunch of hotel rooms downtown, inappropriate expenditures off the bat.
It's once that green comes, man, they all just start disappointing.
Didn't take long to start compromising those principles, huh?
Yeah,
principles. And then the incompetence, the lack of accountability. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, because I remember Gussman, when he was still sheriff that last year, they took the jail away from him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they took it away from him. I'll never forget this interview he had, and he sounded like such a pussy. He was like, I just want my jail back. Give me my jail back. I was like, it's your jail? And remember when he ran it, there was guns in the cells. They had video of people doing drugs in his cells and all that. And now he's an authority on how to run a jail.
Right. Well.
Because they keep interviewing him now. Now that...
I haven't seen him interviewed for this.
Weekend long, And the fuck thing that fucked... It was so fucked. The last 2 weeks, I had to work on a Saturday, so I got Friday off.
Mm.
And I love Bold and the Beautiful. You know that soap opera?
Really?
I love that
Ridge
show.
Forrester?
Oh, yeah. Ridge and Hope and Carter.
Wow. Okay. You hit a nerve here with our guest.
Brooke. Ridge is a good guy, but he just can't make up his mind.
Big jawline.
Yeah, he does.
You watch that same story, Dustin?
Where I grew up?
Everybody watches it, huh?
Oh, my God. Young and the Restless.
Young and the Restless I used to watch a lot, but now that I'm older, it's like an hour show. I can't deal with it for a whole hour. Yeah, but whereas Bold and the Beautiful is just an hour, and it's just like, that's just enough.
Yeah.
That's just enough, and it keeps me waiting for the next episode.
Okay.
Keeps
your appetite wet.
But I've been trying for years to produce a one-man show on the life of Eric Braeden, who is Victor Newman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've been trying for years to get this off the ground.
I can't imagine why it's not getting any interest.
I can't get any money or backers.
All the relatability there.
Yeah. Still doing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Still Victor.
And did you know?
Stay right on that mic.
Oh, and did you know that those Palisades, he lost his house in those Palisades fire.
That.
Yeah. So he'll get back, because that's what Victor Newman does.
Okay.
He's all about revenge.
He just buys up the whole mountain.
Yeah, he'll just do it all.
That's kind of how he rolls.
But anyway, so I had these last two Fridays off. And two Fridays ago, what would happen? There was something big news story. Where the Pope died, or they reelected the Pope.
Right, the new Pope. Yeah.
So they preempted Bold and the Beautiful, so I couldn't watch it.
Son of a bitch.
So I was so pissed off. And then this last Friday, the jailbreak happens, so it's all 24/7 coverage.
Right.
Wow.
And so I'm trying to catch up.
Who gets screwed when there's a jailbreak? Manny Chevrolet.
Manny Chevrolet gets screwed constantly.
I mean, Friday's the best episode, right?
Yeah, because it's always the
cliffhanger, right?
And they give you that little tease for next week.
Man, you really are from L.A.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And you know where they have, in Bold and the Beautiful, where, what's their big company, their fashion company's name?
It's been Is it Jerbo or not something, Jerbo?
No, that's Young and the Restless. It's something else. It's like two words.
It's been so long.
But you know, they make their industry. They have these exterior shots, you know, of their offices. And you know what it is? It's basically CBS's studio where they film Price is Right, all those game shows and stuff. They just they make it look like you know, whatever it's called, Jabot or whatever. I don't know what it's called. But yeah, it's crazy going nuts. And it's national news.
So. Oh yeah, look, I was sitting in the DC airport last Friday trying to get home. I had gone up there to play with the Iguanas and Sonny Landreth a couple of shows there, and it was supposed to be an easy flight, 6:40 in the evening. Well, we had that giant storm coming through the whole middle of the country, so we're stuck there watching the news keep cycling over and over, and we're sitting in the restaurant, the whole Iguanas band, and it's all over the national news as the New Orleans jailbreak. And then now, you know, a few days later, they still have six of them at large.
Yes.
And
I think they're across the street.
And they could be. Yeah, I saw those guys. I gave them a second look. It's like, it could be at least three of them right over there. And so, you know, this break unveils a real problem there. So that's the Orleans Parish Jail. Now, is that different from Orleans Parish Prison, they used to call it? I don't know if that's right
you
next door.
OPP.
OPP.
Now, this is OPSP or something.
Okay.
Orleans Parish Sheriff's Prison.
Sheriff's Prison, okay.
But they're the ones, I think it's the one and the same, because they're the ones who got all that millions and millions and dollars.
I thought they had the whole new facility, and you look at it looks like it's 50 years old. And so one of the guys that escaped is a convicted murderer.
Yes.
A very dangerous guy, but he's there housed with other people who are just awaiting trial.
Yeah, for,
So, you know, that's a problem right there. If they had me in there on a you know, some bullshit charge, you know, overnight, I could be sharing a cell with that guy.
Right. Well, funny. They're supposed to have, because that was the first floor quad. They should have the violent offenders apparently on the top floor.
Uh-huh.
The first floor is for just, you know, guys who you know,
right,
just burglarized
or picked up on a, you know, like waiting to bond out or something,
right, exactly.
You know, over the weekend.
No, it's you know, well, it's typical. You know, I think it's just typical.
Yeah. So as a result of these violent felons getting on the loose, several assistant DAs have fled the state with their families, because the people that had prosecuted this guy
are afraid that
he's on the loose and he might come looking for him.
I don't know if these guys are like cartel types. I just think they're
still.
I
mean, they just think.
Look at those. What are those two? Those the two guys. One, two of the guys. The next day, we're on Bourbon Street.
Right, right.
It's like
walking around in hoodies in the 90-degree.
Yeah, they caught him the same day. It's real smart guy.
Yeah.
I guess he wanted a hurricane or
he was thirsty, man. He can't get a hand grenade in
prison. Well, I bet he could. He could get a real hand grenade in prison, probably.
Right.
I don't know. But it's a joke, and we'll see what happens. I'm now, you know, I'm at the point where it's, what, day four or five that these guys are out? I'm pulling for them.
Okay.
I just, hey,
it's going
man.
Full Luigi on them.
Yeah,
huh?
Just go, man.
Run, Joe, run.
Yeah, you know, I'll set up a TikTok for them or
GoFundMe, OnlyFans, something.
Well, the one guy I feel bad for, because I don't know why they haven't caught him yet, is the one guy who has tattoos on his face.
There's only one that has tattoos on his face?
Well, there's a couple that have them on their neck.
Okay.
But this guy has one on his forehead and both cheeks.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can't recognize this guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, unless he's going around doing the pandemic mask.
That could be. Probably not. Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, apparently all four were still like in the city limits. I don't know if maybe one of these guys had a real plan to get out of the state. I mean, they had such
they
a
may
large,
be gone at this point. You
yeah,
know?
Well, they had such a large head start.
No, they don't do that.
They had a large head start.
Oh, yeah, like 8-hour head start.
Yeah, 8-hour head start, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. It's,
but you know,
keeping the brand out there, as Ray Nagin would say.
Yeah, exactly. But the greatest footage, I thought, was them running across the freeway.
The interstate.
Yeah.
Right, at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I've had to do that once in my life.
Really?
And it wasn't for a jailbreak. It was just trying to
get out of Mexico.
Well, no, it was on the 405, I think.
Oh,
and my car died in the center divider area, and it was like three in the it was like three in the morning.
Later, okay.
It was, but it's L.A., so there's still millions of cars out there at three in the morning, and I was like, well, I'm really close to my apartment.
If I could just make it across those six lanes of traffic.
And I had a bunch of stash on me.
Okay.
So it was like,
you were motivated.
Sit here.
Right.
You know, sit here in this car and wait. For the highway patrol to say you need help.
Right.
No,
give you a once over.
No. Yeah, the chips.
Right.
So I ran across the freeway.
Okay. I could picture that. Yeah. But you were doing some comedy running. You've always been a funny runner.
It was like, what's that video game? Frogger.
I was about to say.
Something like that, you know.
I could picture that.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's the big headline.
Right,
that's
the big headline. You know, and it almost eclipsed a real loss of the New Orleans cultural vista or world is the loss of the passing of Al Scaramuza.
I don't know who that is.
The crawfish king.
Oh, right.
Al
he
Scaramuza.
Invented the way to eat it, right?
Well, of New Orleans. He was the guy. Of course, he was a great self-mythologizer, but, you know, all the best are. But, you know, the way he told the story is that before him, everybody in New Orleans ate crabs. And now I remember when I was a kid, my grandparents and their neighbors, they would get boiled crabs and sit and eat them. And they never ate crawfish. But he says he figured out how he could get crawfish cheap from, I don't know, maybe Lafayette or somewhere else, and started promoting that and made it a thing here. But besides just having the seafood city, you know, and he had a whole ad campaign involving a jingle and very colorful guy. He was in the music business and had the Scram label back in the 50s and 60s and worked with Alan Toussaint and all kind of people. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, there's people that know more than me on this, but Al was definitely involved in the New Orleans R&B scene. And one time the Iguanas played a private party that he was in attendance for, and he was maybe kind of the guest of honor or something. We got to chit-chat with him while they were waiting to introduce him, and he's a very cool guy, and we actually talked him into doing a little bit of his jingle, Seafood City, with the Iguanas backing him up, so that was a...
What is it about New Orleans and, like, these oddball celebrities?
Well, you know, that's our stock and trade. We love that, man.
You get that at any time.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Oddballs.
Right. But he was one of the greats. And, you know, I was actually in contact with his great nephew, you know, close relative with him. And I was for years trying to get him on the podcast as a guest. And I thought we might have had a shot, and maybe at one time. But, you know, he was, again, very old. He was in his 90s when he passed away. So could never make it happen. But anyway, shout out to the great Al Scaramuza.
Man, I just,
never be another.
Speaking of celebrities, sorry. But I just saw a young picture of the Duck Lady the other day.
Oh, Ruthie the Duck Lady. Yeah. Now, Manny, was that before your time here? Was that a...
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But there was a Duck Lady in New York I knew in the 80s. There was one in the 80s.
Kind of a franchise deal.
Yeah.
Just farming
like
them out.
That Naked Cowboy who started here in the French Quarter, I remember seeing him in New York.
He was in New York.
On Broadway.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. He started here. I didn't realize that.
Okay. Well, I remember the first time I ran for mayor... Chris Rose, who still worked at the Times-Picayune.
A good friend of Chris.
He wanted to interview me for a little video thing. Back then, I guess it was just happening with the little vlogs or whatever they call them. This is in the early 2000s. So Chris paid for me to get a cab to the French Quarter. And I did this interview with him, you know, because I was a candidate at the time. And... during the interview, we were like on one corner, I don't know, Bourbon Street. During an interview, the Naked Cowboy just comes up and starts serenading us during the interview. And that's the first time I ever noticed this guy. And then, I saw him in New York, years later.
Nice.
Doing the same thing.
I know who you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, he was pushy guy.
He kind of looked like Fabio.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he looked like Fabio. You know, but I guess their careers went the same way.
Yeah. selling margarine.
Yeah, well, Chris was on the show years ago.
Yeah, yeah, Chris Rose.
Our good friends, but he disappeared, man. He went off into the
He's
sunset.
In the North Shore somewhere, something like that.
I think he's in Florabama.
He left that.
And he's not even on the coast. He's in the interior somewhere.
I can't even reach him anymore.
Yeah, nobody can.
You're probably better off.
Nobody can. He's doing a, I don't know, something. He's hiding out. Yeah. Laying low, as they say.
You know, there's other big news that happened So apparently this famous climber from Norway or England or something like that, just last week he scaled Mount Everest for the 19th time. It's like, who cares?
Yeah.
You did it 18 times before. Why do you have to? Why don't you try scaling something else?
Right. What's the difference between
like
that
your wife
and
or something? Okay. You know, that kind of thing.
Empire State Building.
Yeah. You know. So I just, it was like on big national news and all the web. It was like, who cares?
19? Come on.
19. You know, it's like, yeah, you know.
Get over it.
After three times, you know, or so, it's like, you know, fuck it.
Right. Move on.
Yeah, move on, you know.
I hear you, man.
You know, it's like, and another thing making news, which I thought was hilarious, is I guess our administration, our fearless leader, Donald Trump, has brought over, I guess, suppressed white South Africans to our country.
Yes.
These people have been, abused and you know.
The Afrikaners.
But the funny thing is, and I saw the photos of all of these people coming, these white South Africans are going to start a new life in America. Well, you know, you have, just like back in World War II, where the Japanese people were settled in certain parts, and the Vietnamese, when they came over, you know, they put them in certain parts of the country, the refugees and all. These South Africans, apparently, 30% are going to be moved to East St. Louis.
Wow. Oh, man.
That's an odd choice.
Yeah. Wow.
Have you ever been to East St. Louis?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a flat tire there once.
Okay.
Yeah, and then another like 20% are going to Compton, California.
Wow.
So, we'll see what happens.
They
and I don't know about the other.
They should feel at home in both of those places.
Well, I would think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
they have those shanty kind of towns and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, tin roof shacks and stuff like that.
Yeah, some familiar environments.
And apparently 8% are going to New Orleans East.
Okay.
Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah.
Right
so,
on.
Trump's a good guy.
Okay. Thinking this
He's
through.
Helping his people out.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. Yeah.
But I just thought that was hilarious. I guess, think about the Trump administration. They don't seem to do their homework.
No, they're not good with homework.
Yeah,
no.
It's just like,
no, the details.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea. Just do it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Even a good idea will be ruined by those guys.
I'm
not saying this is a good idea. I'm just saying, even if something, if you thought, okay, well, that's, you know, like a broken clock is right twice a day. So here's one.
Right.
They accidentally got something right. Even then, the incompetence and the cruelty is so high in both cases that it will fuck it up. You know,
yeah.
They won't be able to, they'll poison the well. Anyway, it's, we try not to get too bound up on that. Maybe just a little bit of related news. I don't know if you saw Nottoway Plantation burned to the ground White Castle. Never been there. I played there a number of times over the years as different private parties, or the most memorable, and I guess the last time I played there was for Todd Rundgren's 65th birthday convention that he started off having like in Hawaii, and they had it every couple of years, and then they had one at Nottoway Plantation. And the Iguanas got hired by a friend of his to go and play for him.
Really?
And we wound up at this birthday party where Todd was sitting about right over there, like about 12 feet away, getting his birthday cake and getting some presents, and we're up there on stage taking a break while standing watching them. And Joe Cabral, saxophone player in the Iguanas, with me. I know I'm a big Todd Rundgren fan. He's also a big Todd Rundgren fan, going back many years. And after that little thing was over and everybody got up and walked away, and they were going to go prepare to see Todd play his new record, which was kind of an electronica record that he had at the time.
Wait, he played there?
Yeah, he played there. He had a band that came in. He did a set after
what
that thing.
What year was this?
It's maybe like 5 years ago. It was before the pandemic.
Wow.
But so we're packing up, and I'm looking at where Todd was sitting, and like there's his piece of cake sitting there. So I go over and I get it. And I walk up to Joe Cabral and I go, "Would you like a bite of Todd's cake?" And he goes, no, I'm good. And I've said, no, this isn't the cake that was for Todd. This is Todd's piece of cake.
Yeah.
Would you like a bite? And he goes, absolutely. Oh. So we each took a couple of bites of Todd's cake, yeah. And we felt somehow, I don't know, something.
How weird that event was over there.
It was weird, and they had people camping out there, like, you know, these Todd Rundgren fans that go to these things, they'll camp out.
I think
out.
They should burn down all plantations.
Well, there you go. That's that was not a unique sentiment.
Yeah,
but you know, I had
now, what was his band before he went solo? What was it? Utopia? What was it?
Well, yeah, that was one of them, but there was one
cuz I saw his band before he went solo at the Roxy in the mid 70s. What was that?
Yeah, the something, man. Right?
I forget what they were called.
No, it was.
And it was because...
We'll have to look it up on the break, maybe.
All right.
We'll come back. Okay. Because the fans are yelling at us right now. Yeah. We just can't hear them because it's...
I forget what they were called.
On tape. Well, maybe we should get to our guest here.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. He's already involved here. He's got a lovely presence to him. He's a terrific artist, kind of a hypnotic neo trance, neo southern gothic,
neo trans,
trance.
Oh, trance.
Trance hop. I don't know. We can get into
trans.
Yeah, no.
Never heard him put that way.
Not that I know. Anyway, terrific songwriter, singer, guitarist, multi instrumentalist, producer, recording artist. His debut record was So Long. And it landed him on...
No one listened to it. It was So Long.
So Long. No, it's the title. It's So Long. Landed him on Atlantic Records up in New York and changed the direction of his life and his career. We're going to hear about all that and much more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Dustin Luke. Welcome, Dustin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I hope I didn't put you off with that initial, some of those adjatives at the beginning there. Yeah,
no, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm a musical mutt, so I don't really
okay,
know
sure.
what I am.
Right,
so.
I know.
But I've never heard that description. It's, okay. I like it. I don't mind.
All right. Just free ball.
Now, what is that last name? What is it again?
Luke. Louque.
And what is that? Is that French? Is it Italian?
Well, my grandparents, like where I grew up, is real Cajun, but it's not Cajun like Lafayette. So musically, we didn't get the violins and the
accordions.
The fiddle and accordions and all. No.
You got the spoons, right?
But we got the language, you know, like my grandmother spoke broken English, broken French. My Cajun grandmother, anyway.
My American grandmother spoke broken English, but anyway.
No, but we were like 40 miles from here, so New Orleans was like very influential.
Yeah.
What parish is that?
St. James.
St. James, okay. Was that Grand Point, Louisiana?
Yeah, my little town is called Grand Point. It's really a little blip.
Yeah.
Perique Tobacco is kind of what we're known for.
Oh, okay.
It was like taught by the Choctaw Indians.
Right.
And all the people did that, like coming up.
They grew tobacco?
Yeah. I mean, it was hard work in the sun.
Sure.
July, harvest. And it wasn't until the factories came on the river where people started, you know, doing that,
right.
Getting better jobs.
Now, are y'all kind of Creole?
Not.
Okay.
No, I'm not, but there are Creoles there.
Right.
I'm not Creole. I mean, okay. I did a test recently, and I was so pissed. I didn't, I didn't have a drop.
Because looking at you, I thought
everybody thinks you could be easily.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thinks I'm
right
Creole,
on.
But I'm not.
You know, it's DNA tests. I don't put full faith in them. But anyway, so your family has been there in that region for a while, as far back as anybody can remember, right?
Yeah, nobody's leaving.
Right, of course.
Except me.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they weren't thrilled about that, though, right?
Well,
but you went back. You still see them, right? You still see your family.
Yeah.
Well, so take us back there when you're first starting out. You're going to school in that area. You have mom and dad's siblings.
Yeah, so I have two brothers, and I'm in the middle. I have a sister.
Musical family?
No. I mean, my dad played a little guitar. He played like Hank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He knew a few chords. He would sing Butterbean. It's like this old folk
right,
song.
Right.
Just the bowl of Butterbean. It's great. But everybody worked over there. They didn't really like take the arts seriously at all.
Okay.
So I didn't come up with the arts. Like none. Zero. So everything is sports. And that's what I did.
And smoking.
Tobacco.
Yeah.
I mean, oof. That was strong
stuff. Were you chewing it? Were they chewing it too?
Well, Perique tobacco is like a pipe tobacco.
Oh.
It's really, 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 really strong. Like people that love pipe tobacco love Perique.
Yeah, my dad was so bright, he quit smoking and took up the pipe.
There you go.
I was just like, well, what's the point? You're a two-pack-a-day smoker, I'm going to quit cigarettes, and then he starts smoking a pipe.
Yeah.
He died of throat cancer.
Oh, jeez.
Oh,
yeah, you can't outsmart.
Then he went on the real pipe, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well.
Why not? I encouraged him.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, if the end is near, may as well
just do
go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, he dug it.
Right on. Everybody does, you know. Were y'all working in the tobacco industry? Your family involved in,
well,
in
no,
that,
like,
farming?
So
or,
fast forward, like maybe my dad, his generation came up with it. He was the youngest of 11, so all of his siblings came up that way.
So you had still all those cousins from, you must have had 100 cousins,
man,
huh?
I have so many relatives.
Yeah.
So many, I don't even know them all, you know.
Right.
But, you know, his generation, he was the youngest, so the factories had come, so the trends changed. They started, he and his brothers were really good machinists in the factories.
Mm.
And fast forward, my dad, you know, in the 80s, quit the machine, the factories, and started his own machine shop, and did really well, and it allowed me to go to college.
Oh, okay. So
it was like a big deal for me to be able to get the hell out.
Right. So where'd you wind up going to college?
So I played football, believe it or not, 2 years at McNeese State, and when I quit that, you know, it was like what you did over there. You played sports, played baseball, basketball.
I spent a couple of summers at McNeese State, the summer camp program we lived in those dorms there.
Okay.
So I'm very familiar with Lake Charles.
Like sports?
No. Okay. It was like kind of a school camp. Like,
okay. Yeah. I didn't know anything about Lake Charles. I was there for 2 years, and then I went to Mississippi State, and that's where I discovered a talent for music I had never touched an instrument. You
know? How did that come about?
We ended up going to New York, a group of us, and I hate to say it, Manny might make fun of me, but it was like a modeling kind of thing.
Oh.
Sorry, Manny. I know everybody moves to L.A. to make it, and they're pretty and all that. But
they do it to New York, too.
It was kind of a thing that I was looking for any opportunity I could, you know.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I ended up there, and I'm in the hotel lobby, and this guy's playing the piano. It was so beautiful. And for whatever reason, I'm like, I have to freaking do this. I want to learn how to play, you know.
Was it Liberace?
I don't think he had a pinky ring.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't think it was.
He got a cock ring, Liberace.
Yeah, cock ring. It was.
But you didn't get to know him that well, though. Okay, all right.
It was Christopher Street.
Okay.
No. But anyway, I came back to Mississippi State, and I was begging them to let me in a class. And they were like, no, we're full. And I went there every day. I don't know what the hell was wrong with me. I was possessed. And it was just a beginner class, like a group class.
Like piano class?
Yeah, no, like
right.
I had float like a balloon.
Right,
for a
right.
week, you know? So that was my entrance into music.
So they like did they finally let you in?
They let me in.
Oh, okay. And so you started fooling around with playing keyboards?
Yeah, I just understood like what the notes were on the page. I mean, it was a long work in progress.
Sure.
Know? But I was in the piano lab every night, and like there were piano majors playing Bach and Beethoven.
Right.
And I was just tinkering, you know.
Right, but you were in that milieu.
I didn't care.
You were in that environment,
The feeling was amazing. Like just playing on the black keys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like something hit me.
It excited you.
It was unbelievable. I was fine. Like I didn't need anybody. I did it every night.
Nice. So
sorry, Manny.
No.
So then you're saying so that was your first trip up to New York, but then somehow you wind up getting back to New York. Now,
so after college, I always wanted to live in New Orleans, you know, growing up 40 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived actually on Hillary, was my first place.
Okay, right then, here in this neighborhood.
Yeah, in this neighborhood. Like when I drove here, I'm like, oh God, this is my old stomping ground.
Okay.
And then Maple Street before I moved to New York. I was kind of in this area.
Yeah, you're right here in the university area.
And I had a grand piano like I got for college. I had like progressed and, you know, I was playing classical, but very beginner. Like I could play a 4-page piece of music, but it was very hard. I had to memorize everything.
Okay.
And I was only 2-3 years into it.
Sure, sure.
But I started fooling around with guitar. And
so how did you pay your rent though?
Oh, I was working, man.
Yeah, you were working?
I was working, yeah.
Music. Selling cigarettes?
No, my family. My dad started a business, and I was working for them.
Here in New Orleans?
Yeah. Doing sales, yeah. So I worked along the river, all the factories on the river. I was doing sales. But music was just it was for me. I wasn't trying to make it. I didn't care about all that.
Right.
But in the meantime, I got, like, as an actor, believe it or not, through modeling. Sorry, Manny.
So why do you keep apologizing?
Because he's from L.A. Everybody moves to L.A. to make it. No, and I know you probably like saying, oh, here's another one.
He's not judgmental like that.
Oh, man, he's not judgmental.
No, he's mocking. He's not judgmental. Okay. There's a difference. He really doesn't care that much. Yeah.
But through that,
I'll forget your name after an hour.
Yeah.
I know.
He's not that invested. So you were successful at modeling.
What happened was I got commercials.
Where, in New Orleans?
Yes, dude, I got a thick Cajun accent.
Is this in the 70s or what year?
It's mid 90s.
Like the 90s. Mid-90s. How old are you?
53.
Oh, okay. So the 90s, you were getting...
Yeah, in the 90s, I was getting jobs, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like getting decent paychecks. And that led me, I'm like, well, I love music, but I'm not a musician. Not even close.
Okay.
I have talent, but I couldn't write songs at the time. So I was just getting commercials, and I started getting curious about the theater. I'm like, well, maybe I could learn something. Maybe I could fake. You could fake it in acting easier than you can in music.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
I think. I don't know.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So that was my thing. I was like, that was my plan, and then that led me. Somebody told me about Stella Adler in New York, and this kind of person I am. I need to know what I'm doing. I want to be an artist. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. I wanted it so bad to have something. Or like my dad had machine work. And he was awesome at it. He loved it.
A purpose. Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I had a lot of tragedy coming up. So I was looking for something to do with my dad's success. Like, I'm not going to buy a bigger house than him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, like, saving money. I'm like, I need to do something else.
You said tragedy. What tragedy was happening?
Lots of tragedy.
Modeling career was over? Is that it?
No. No? I never really had a modeling career. No, just growing up.
So when
man,
you did modeling here in New Orleans, were they catalogs or something like that?
Yeah, I did some catalog stuff, but it ended up being mostly
underwear. Underwear modeling.
Calvin Klein. I'm just kidding. That was Mark Wahlberg.
Sears and Roebuck.
Anyway.
But so you wound up getting into Stella Adler. School?
Well, I when I was living here on Maple Street, I was saving a lot of money.
Conservatory,
yeah. I was saving a lot of money and trying to give myself the best chance I could when I moved to New York because I knew it was going to be expensive.
Right.
And I just faked my way into Stella Adler and just, I didn't know how to audition, you know.
And they just liked
me.
You?
They liked me, and I'm like, I'm going to do the summer program, and they're going to invite me into the two-year program that I wanted.
You didn't
and
have
I worked
to,
my ass off.
You didn't have to, like, do a scene or anything like that for
them? Oh, yeah. I did, you know, some knockoff Brando Southern New Orleans kind of thing. You know, that's all I could do, you know, at the time. And they ate it up, and they, like, let me in.
They ate it up.
but when I got in that two-year program, like, you had, like, these old-school acting teachers. They were, like, this one was the most intimidating woman. She smoked the whole class. and she was around during Brenda when Brenda was there, you know. Everybody was scared of her, man.
Maureen Stapleton.
No.
Is that her?
Alice Winston.
Oh, yeah. Alice Winston.
She's passed on.
She smoked camels, though.
Oof. I don't know what she smoked, but the ashes.
Oh, okay, yeah, I get it.
They would just kind of do
Winston
this.
Winston tastes good like a cigarette should, but
the
she
whole
was smoking
class,
camels.
She were waiting for the ash to fall. She
Oh, yeah. I know people like that. Yeah. It makes you nervous.
Yeah. But super intimidating, but the woman liked me. She was hard on me. And it was people like that that, like, told me I was an artist. You know what I mean? You know how it is, man. When you're coming up, you're
right.
You don't know. You're just you, right?
Right. And you have people that have obvious, they've seen a million things. And for them to go, you know, you have a lot of work to do, but you could do this.
You got something. She would hug me, like, right in front of the public theater, right in front of Joe's Pub.
Yeah.
She would, like, after we got in a fight in class or something, she would hug me, you know.
Did you sleep with her?
She was a little, she was up there.
So did you get an agent and all that and get photos?
I had an agent here, but not in New York.
Yeah.
So what happened in New York is I was buying music equipment when I was in the acting school. I had a 4-track and then computer recording was coming up, you know.
Okay.
So I was taking classes at New School too to like learn more.
Okay. And in like... Home recording, computer production.
That was a whole new thing. You know, you didn't need a record deal anymore to make a record.
Right.
And I wasn't a musician. And then my buddy from here, from Lafayette, I met him in New Orleans, Donovan Guidry. He moved up there. He's a big hip-hop head. He loved making beats. And he did something for me. Like, he gave me confidence, you know, to think that I can actually do this.
Uh-huh.
You know, he would knock on my door on Maple Street here and hear me sing, and I wasn't a ham, you know. I wasn't like trying to sing for anybody. I'm just doing this for my own. And he was the one that was like, man, you could do something if you come up with your own thing, you know. So eventually, years later, he comes to New York and we set out to make a record.
Where did you live in New York?
I started in Chelsea for a little bit, then the East Village, and then Williamsburg, because, you know, everybody was moving there at the time in the late 90s.
Okay.
It was cheap.
Still cheap, yeah. It was before it got all hipstered out. Yeah.
Well, it was hipsters. I mean, it was a lot of people want to be cool, you know?
Right, sure. Everybody wants to be cool.
You know how it is.
Well, now, to as far as like your friend, you know, saying, yes, you could do something like this, and recognizing kind of where you're coming from as an artist, even a fledgling artist. Now, we met when we played the first Clash Day show a couple of years ago, Chicky Wawa, and then you played the second year as well. Now, on that first year, we had all kind of people, like, I don't know, 20 different artists, and you did two songs, and one of them was just by yourself and just very direct. And after the rehearsals, where people that knew each other were just kind of talking about how, you know, different things had gone, and more than one person said, I really like that Luke guy, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, wow. I was like, yeah, no shit, man. He's really cool.
Really?
Huh? Well, just because you have, like you're saying, you don't push. It's a very calming to hear you because it's you don't have a contrived thing that you're shoving down people's
throats.
Man,
I met somebody recently and they were like, what is your act? And I was offended.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't have an act. But thanks for saying that, because, like, I've always wanted to be accepted into the New Orleans music community. I mean, I'm not a New Orleans musician, really, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I grew up right there. But to me, when I think of New Orleans and music, is driving here at 15 or 16 to go to the little clubs to hear the new wave. And
okay.
So it's New Orleans music is proper, like Irma Thomas and Fats Domino. That's the kind of stuff I grew up with, like all the older people listen to that stuff growing up. But when I think of New Orleans and music, it's like the stuff like the Smiths and all this other stuff that I was discovering in the clubs.
Okay.
That, to me, and being in the Quarter and like having all these new experiences for the first time, that is New Orleans to me.
Right.
So
you get up there to New York and you start experimenting with all this loop-based music,
mm-hmm.
and you start meeting some sympathetic collaborators up there and
yeah, I mean, you try to find people to help you.
Sure.
Like, I love dub music a lot, and we didn't know what the hell we were doing, you know, but we had great work ethic, you know, talking about the Perique tobacco people,
yeah,
working in the field, like it was grueling,
yeah.
And those people have like a work ethic like out of this world, and I guess I have it too, and I just applied it to music, you know.
Okay.
So I didn't care that I wasn't a musician. I knew I was going to put the work in, and I read the manuals and.
but so you're experimenting with writing songs,
yeah.
Songwriting. You'd already been singing,
and I wanted to make like modern Louisiana music. With loops and trip hop. I love Massive Attack. I love Portishead, that 94
right.
record, Dummy.
Right.
I love that stuff.
Now, listening to some of your records, you know, certain, like that kind of Cold Machine vibe combined with very passionate kind of folky vocals, you know, it's like, did you see like the Eno and Bowie records foundational like kind of stuff,
Eno,
you know,
and Lanois is huge influence on me,
yeah.
And you know, U2, I used to like U2. I had to let them go, you know,
okay.
What I mean,
they now kinda, what about Kraftwerk? You ever get into Kraftwerk? Right on.
I
Manny
love
saw
them.
Kraftwerk a couple
oh,
of about a
yeah.
month ago.
Let me ask you something.
Pioneers.
When you were taking classes at Stella Adler, now was there anyone in your classes who became, you know, a working actor famous?
Yeah, not huge, but yeah.
It was? You can't remember their names?
I mean, there's a guy, Billy Hayes. He just came see me.
Oh, I know Billy Hayes, yeah.
No, you don't.
Well, I know. I don't know him.
Yeah, you know.
But no, I know who he is.
He lives in L.A.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah.
But he, he got...
He was in Midnight Express, I think.
I don't know.
He?
I mean, he came see me, like,
that
last
was the real
year,
guy's name.
He had a role with a Louisiana accent. It was like just north of the interstate, like Natchitoches, and he needed the accent. I'm like, it's not Cajun, man. It's more Southern, you know.
Yeah,
so he
right.
came to spend some time
okay.
with me. To,
consulting.
Yeah.
Right on.
But there's some others that did well.
Nice, nice.
Not super huge.
Right. Well, I'm fascinated by the story, and this is a great time, I think, looking at the drinks and the clock, Manny.
Yeah, we need to take a break. The Troubled Nation knows the drill. We'll be right back. I woke up in the morning and I saw the sky.
With Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Komen, back with our guest, Mr. Dustin Luke. Now, Dustin, I know you are a longtime listener of the podcast, and I was actually going to ask you, do you feel like you've fallen through the looking glass to actually be on the podcast as many times as you've listened to it? Is this a little bit unsettling?
It's odd.
Okay.
It's odd. Actually, getting on stage with you and hearing your speaking voice, it's like...
Oh, that was weird.
I'm on the podcast.
That was weird. That's funny. Anyway, as a longtime listener, you know that we are a listener-supported operation. And to that end, we have a couple of links in the show notes of every show and the Facebook pages. It's a Venmo link and a PayPal link. And our beloved listeners will support us through those channels, help defray costs, buy us cocktails. And someone bought us a cocktail, only one cocktail.
Only one.
Really? And only...
Yours.
Only a cocktail here at Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge. But shout out to Brian Hudson. Every little bit helps. Thank you, Brian.
Related to the sheriff?
It's spelled differently.
Oh, okay.
But who knows? That whole sheriff, that whole parish prison, they don't seem like good spellers. So anyway.
Right, yeah. Too easy.
Right. Too easy. T-O. Also, Adam, a fellow named Adam, bought a T-shirt. So those T-shirts are live again. So if any for the next 2 weeks, if anybody wants a T-shirt quicker than normal, jump on that Troubled Menswear link in the show notes, and you can get yourself a T-shirt of any size and several different colors, men's and women's sizes. Also, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. The Hawaiian Big Island Jazz and Blues Festival is coming right around the corner. Manny will be happy I'll be gone. I'll miss a week. But that's going to be a terrific show out there at the Mauna Kea Resort Hotel. We have the Iguanas, Lynn Drury, Charlie Halloran, Camille Beaudoin from the Radiators, Sun Pie Barnes, Wayne Toops, on and on and on. I'm leaving someone out, but just look it up there. Great Kenny Martinez.
You're leaving out the
Bergmeier.
EMTs who will be picking up all the old people after 10.
Sure. And perhaps me as well.
Yeah.
I'll be going out there. I'm going to maybe take another stab at snorkeling. Maybe my last one. We'll see. Fingers crossed, Manny. Yes, you can find all the Iguanas dates on the link there at iguanas.com and or the Renee Coman Facebook page. Oh, also, yes, the Patreon page. But anyway, listen to another show. You can get all the plugs. Back to our guest, the great Dustin Luke. Now, professionally, you go by Luke nowadays.
Well, I just released records under my last name.
Right.
And that was just because, when we were, like, researching to do music and we wanted to do Louisiana music, Jamaican music was huge for us. And on 3rd Street in the East Village, they had a Jamaican record shop. And it was amazing how many artists there. I mean, from ska to reggae to there was so much. So that we wanted to start our own label.
Okay.
We were doing this with our own money. I mean, I know Atlantic Records came eventually.
Right, but initially, first record, yeah, you put it out yourself,
the whole thing is us. Like, right? We did it. But that's why we used my last name. It was just, I didn't want to do the something or the that.
Right.
Like, well, using my last name, it'll be a way.
Sounds enough like a band as opposed to a guy.
Yeah, we'll just talk about it.
Right,
talk about Louisiana, talk about culture.
Right.
It was dub music?
No, I mean, dub was like, it was an ingredient.
Yeah.
The bass and maybe some delays, but it wasn't dub music.
Okay.
You know,
but it's this very cool music. And so this was, you were successful. You had people responded to it.
I mean, to this day, I can't believe we did it in 3 years. Because, like, in the 3 years, we were, like, so fried and tired and, like, we got to finish this. It's been 3 years. But neither one of us were musicians.
Okay.
And we made that record in 3 years, and Atlantic signed us. You know, like...
Right.
I could play a little bit, but not really that much. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
So when you get signed by Atlantic, and that's the situation you're in, what happens then?
Everything
you go on
went
tour?
Downhill.
Oh, dude. Yeah, describe your experience. So that was still when there's still plenty of money in the music business. They still had CDs.
There was a little
people
money.
Were buying
a little
CDs.
Bit.
So they.
So we finished the record, and we made a bunch of handmade copies, and we just kind of sent it all over the place. And the next thing you know, we had a following in Toronto, and I hadn't played a live show. I've never played live, and I just made a record.
Uh-huh, right.
But that's why I got into music, because I love records. You know,
so
I
what
love,
would you describe your music as?
I'm all over the place now. So
now, but
it
then.
It started kind of trip-hop, but then I became an actual musician and can play the guitar now. So it's kind of got a folk. Everything has a folk thing, but new wave kind of came in there. Like, I remembered my new wave love, so that kind of came in, but I don't know. I'm all over the place.
New wave like Wham?
No.
Or,
no.
More
like New Order, Joy Division, Smiths, Cure.
Depeche Mode?
I love Depeche Mode, but I mean, my sound favorites. Is...
So all the gay-leaning bands,
yes.
Right?
I don't... Yeah, whatever.
Okay. It just sounds that way.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that music, that era, because of they were using new technology, the 808 and the synthesizers.
Right, well,
I love that.
Particularly people that did it in a way where it retains these... Well, you know, like, listen to your music again, just in terms of, like, visual art, I always think of... Like when serialism and collage really made it from the art world successfully into the pop music arena. And for me, that's like, in a very successful way, it's like Beck and the Beastie Boys and guys like that. And I think you have a lot of those same impulses.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
Where it's, you know, this collage aspect.
It was very collage, very cubist.
Like, right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's kind of, to me, it felt like that. You know, like just
right.
Because I mean, on that first record, we used like Rebirth Brass Band break beats, and at the time, like we loved drum and bass and all that stuff, but we didn't want to do drum and bass.
Right.
We wanted some Louisiana, so we would like sample that stuff, layer it in there. It was fun, you know.
Right.
I mean, a lot of happy accidents.
Well, when music is so joyous to be involved in when it's play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not work, it's play.
Yes.
You know, even if it's hard, even
it
if
was
it's
hard, man.
You know, but
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Time of my life,
you know what
really.
I'm saying? You always retain the sense of play about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're saying, it was fun. It was just fun to do this. That's
it
why
was
we
fun,
did it.
But it was very hard.
Anyway, yes.
I was insecure. Like, it was hard.
Well,
hard.
Let's move a little quicker here. Fine. So you make this record. You get signed to Atlantic, then what does Atlantic do with you? That's what I'm saying. They put you out on the road. You're opening for
so
bands.
We had our own
what's
label.
What's their idea?
And I never liked this label at all, but I didn't know. I was innocent. I didn't know much about labels, really. I should have paid attention. And we signed to this label. And my manager, who I trusted, you know, Lava Atlantic, I didn't like anything on that label.
No.
But... they agreed to put our imprint on the...
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, we got Major Muscle. It's going to look like independent. But the thing I messed up on, like they used house PR. And I would have to go up there, 27th floor. Everybody's talking to my forehead.
Yeah.
You know, thinking I'm going to be famous. You know, they're thinking I'm going to be famous. That's how they're treating me. And
how did that make you feel? Could you feel it right off the bat? You felt objectified?
Oh, felt terrible.
You felt like a piece of meat?
Yes. I didn't like it. And then, you know, they would release like these bullshit t-shirts and just everything after we let it go became cheap.
Yeah.
Everything. You know, I'd be in the PR room. I'd have to go in there all day and people would call me and interview me and I would hear the PR person, you know, talking about Kid Rock. I mean, she'd be calling, like, the Fader magazine, which I loved back in the day. I'm like, yeah, like Fader. And she would fucking mention that guy, and I'm like...
Like in the same breath
doors,
as you?
All doors were being closed
like,
on me.
Like mention Kid Rock in relation to you as something that, if you like Kid Rock, check this guy, Luke, out.
So...
Wow.
Eventually, I'll fast forward it for you.
Sure.
I did well in film through them because they had a great film department and they got my music in a lot of films.
So you got a lot of sync stuff? A
lot of sync.
And so where did your music show up?
It was
up?
Like
TV shows?
Into the Blue, like Summer Blockbuster, like Paul, whatever that guy that died. And
Paul Rubens?
Paul.
Pee Wee Herman?
No.
The one in the back of the theater?
Yeah. Well, Paul Rubens.
He's alone in the back of the theater.
Don't give him a hard time. Paul Schrader. I don't know.
I don't remember. He died. Okay. But Jessica Alba.
Paul Lynn.
Center Square.
I don't know. He did those Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, he died in a car.
He died. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
driving a
Disturbia,
car.
Shia LaBeouf, you know.
Okay.
Veronica Mars.
Oh, cool.
TV, you know,
stuff. Yeah, no, it's
stuff that's in syndication now, and
right,
it's like,
right.
Still getting checks.
You still getting some? Checks. Are you still getting some checks? All right. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
It's not great, but you know, it's all right.
Yeah, no, it's you must have felt good about that.
That was the thing that told me I was a songwriter.
Right.
Because you don't ever believe it, you know. That was the weird mind fuck, if I could say. The critics, when they would write nice stuff about you, just like...
Really? You felt imposter syndrome?
Oh, it took me 20 years to like the White Stripes, because they were saying nice stuff about the White Stripes, too. And I'm like, well, they say this shit about everybody, you know? So it took me a long time to appreciate a lot of bands, because I just thought, like, people just talking shit.
Well,
you know?
they you just can't pay attention to what they say.
I mean,
you
got to
decide
nice
for
stuff.
Yourself. Yeah.
But anyway.
So the Atlantic Records deal, it has some good sides, but you realize, well, these people are just shooting for the next quarter.
Well, the industry was dead.
Okay.
So I was on the road, and they were telling me I'm not selling records, and there was no... I would go into the record shops, no record on the shelf.
Didn't have the record there.
They weren't doing their part, you know?
Right.
And then meanwhile, they got me on a tour bus. They stripped me down to an acoustic guitar, which I made a produced record. I had a band that I needed because I wasn't really...
Were you opening for somebody?
Yeah, I was always opening for people.
Anybody of note?
Ah, man, from G Love, Donovan Frankenreiter, Jack Johnson.
Well, those are all cool
Steel
opening
Pulse.
Spots. Those are all great opening spots. At the time of the music business,
the business was tanking.
Right.
And they were proceeding. The Atlantic is an old, shaggy carpet.
Yeah.
And they were like,
keep doing the same thing that we've been doing. It worked in the 60s.
Yeah, they were gone as if like things were the same, and I saw the writing on the wall. I'm like, I'm feeling terrible. I'm like, I wanted to disappear for 20 years so everybody would forget. And that's kind of what you get here. I'm sitting here now.
Oh, okay, this is the resurgence now?
I'm not even resurging.
It's the Troubled Men podcast. No, keep in mind where you are. Speaking of which, here, let me give you the Troubled Men podcast stickers. I know you have some already, but let me present
you a
couple
more.
Dude, I was
thinking coming here, I'm like, what the hell am I going to talk about? Because I'm not really, like, ambitious, and I'm not really on the scene. I'm not gigging that much. I am, you know, I definitely make records. But, I mean, even that, I don't even want to make another record. I'm like, who's going to pay for this shit?
Right.
I'm not giving away. So that's kind of what you get with me. Like, fast forward through all that, I'm suspicious on the industry.
Sure.
How to proceed.
You're dubious about the functionality of the music business. Yes.
I think about it as a business.
But you're not dubious about the importance of music.
No.
Yes.
I mean, it's very important to me, and that was the thing that
the
kept
saving
me in
grace.
That kept me in the hotel, and I wouldn't show up to the shows, and that's how I got dropped.
Okay. Well, yeah, you
because I'm like
up.
Man, I need this is for me, like I'm not doing this shit to be famous, like it's for me.
Okay.
Like, and if I keep going and they keep putting me on a billboard like they're doing and it doesn't feel right, then it's not right.
It's corrosive for your soul.
It was, man.
Well, so do you owe the music Atlantic any money?
Oh, I probably owe them some money.
Yeah, because they can't recoup that unless you sell more records. Yeah.
Bro, because, I mean, basically, these music labels, they're like the mob.
Yes.
They sign you, they give you a big advance, and then you spend your whole career paying it back.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so you're still paying him back?
Well, no, because he's off the label. I'm so not he doesn't have to pay him. They don't. It's not an actual loan that's secured against your future earnings, only your future earnings with them. So once you're dropped, they can't collect any more money from you. So you are free. So at that point, that's not the end of your recording career. In fact, you hook up with a bunch of New York downtown luminaries.
Yeah.
Nels Klein.
Nels, like all that.
We're moving on because the podcast is chipping away.
Right after that, I hit the road with my laptop and said, fuck it, I'm just going to make whatever I can from Jamaica to Toronto to Paris to... But, you know, and then...
Well, yeah, so you make a second record that's kind of international record. What was that
It's
record?
Called Luke the Drifter.
Yeah, Luke the Drifter, that's
and
it.
And it's like very like... Well, I was in a freak folk kind of... All my friends were like freak folk in my neighborhood. They were huge stars, like David Byrne was coming get them, and Devendra Banhart. Coco Rosie was another sister duo. They're huge in Paris. But anyway, so the freak folk thing was kind of in there. So anyway, I don't know.
Talking about the downtown scene, John Zorn, the Knitting Factory.
When I was my manager, when I was had a manager before I stopped showing up to my shows and everybody left me, was this woman named Liz Penta. And she managed Mark Rebo, Modesky Martin Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Now she manages Nels. Natalie Merchant.
He's so great. But Nels
is awesome,
great.
Man. He's just a nice... So I'll tell you the story with Nels. So I'm living in... Fast forward to 2010. I'm living in St. Rock. Restoring houses because I love restoring houses.
In New Orleans.
In New Orleans.
St. Rock, yeah. My ancestral home. You know, both of my grandparents are buried at St. Rock Cemetery.
Oh, I love
talk
it.
About it too much, sorry.
Every time I bring up St. Rock, somebody would have a story. Yeah. But I loved it. Like, everybody was moving here from L.A., New York, and I'm thinking, like, man, a music scene, a new music scene.
Mm-hmm.
Not a music scene. A new, something new's happening.
And you're up in New York, then you come back here to...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was, like, trying to, you know, I wanted to own property in, you know, New York, you know.
It's too late, yeah.
It's too late.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. I could... make records. I started making a record called Campo Santo here. Just keep on making records. And I was working a job with my family. They asked me again, you want to come work? I'm like, yeah, I'll work because I'm making music, selling 3 songs a year to film.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with them, but I would drive over the lake every day, 6:30. And then one day OZ was playing Nels. I didn't know who Nels was. I didn't know Wilco's music either, you know?
Uh-huh.
But they're playing this music. It's Jazz Master. I love the Jazz Master guitar.
Right.
You know, a lot of music that uses that. And I called him, like, who is this playing? They're like, Nels Klein. Then I would go on a YouTube rampage, like just pedals, you know, what is he using? All that stuff. But the guy I've been working with, Danny Bloom in Woodstock, you know, he knows everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, man, I went to Nels' wedding.
Okay.
So midway through that record, I'm like, man, let's call Nels. And went up there. And it was a surreal thing because he comes in with the pedals in a bag. Like, just a shopping bag.
For a shopping bag. I like it.
It wasn't a fancy pedal board.
Right.
It was just a shopping bag.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, he brought that one. But anyway, we've become good friends, and we play sometimes together. But yeah, multiple, like some of my other guys, like Josh Werner is more of a peer from Williamsburg, bass.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading books on Lee Scratch Perry when I was in Brooklyn, because I was super into dub, and he was talking about early New Orleans R&B. Mm-hmm. Shirley and Lee.
Right.
Come on, baby, let the good times roll.
Yeah.
And he was saying how, like, the...
Dub guys were listening to that shit.
Yeah. And he was like, it would come across the waves compressed, like, and the bass would be like...
Right.
So that's how they made the music.
Yeah,
the
WWL, Clear Channel Communication.
When I heard that piece of information, I was well on my way to making new music with that. But Josh ended up playing with Lee Scratch Perry, my buddy, you know. Okay. So it's like everything came crashing in.
Right, you know, right.
And producing a record with Lee Scratch Perry. So.
Well, it's amazing when all these small impulses coalesce into all these connections, man.
Yeah. And I still feel like the little tiny Grand Point guy, and I feel better about my music ability. I just do what I do. But
yeah, well, that's all any of us can do. You know? At this point, you're back in New Orleans. We're kind of on the downslope of the podcast. We want to catch up to the contemporary scene here. You're back then when you came back down, you kind of decided, okay, this is going to be a DIY operation. I'm going to play music live. I'm going to make records with my own hands. Go ahead.
For a few records, I kind of existed as like, if you make a great record, something will happen. Because that's what happened to me the first time.
Right.
I'm like, I'm just going to keep making good records. Like, something will happen. Things changed. And then I started a new website again, and people started writing me. And I would answer them myself, and people would be like, I can't believe you wrote me back.
Yeah.
Well, you wrote me.
Right.
And so I got the idea to, and I was playing, I wanted to be in my community so bad, so I would play like anywhere. I would play like St. Rock Tavern. I didn't care. And I was like trying to make myself tough and play solo. Like I was playing solo all of a sudden. No production whatsoever. Nothing. Nothing. Just. And my wife, who I was dating at the time, she's like, baby, there's a lot of people that love your music and they're never coming to St. Cloud Avenue to see you. You know?
Right.
I'm like, okay, so we did a show in her backyard. And then I started answering emails, like people all over the country, when you coming to my town, when you coming. And then I read this book. This one huge girl wrote a book about doing house shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like sucked it up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I bought a touring van, camper van, that I could live in. Because, you know, when you tour as a band, like, you don't see any city you go into. You just boom, 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 and the curtain
right,
opens.
Right, just the highway and the hotel and the
curtain opens
the gig.
And there you are, And I wanted to rethink how I'm going to do this live music thing.
Okay,
because
Luke, as I'm sure you understood non-verbally, at the end of this life, you're dead, and that's the only one you get. So if you wind up just grinding it out your whole life,
that's kind of what's going to happen.
And it's over.
Yeah.
So now you go on.
No, so I just started doing that and humbled myself and played in somebody's living room. And then the next year, it would be in a barn. And then all of a sudden, and I'm doing my own sound. I don't have to deal with that dickhead sound guy who's pissed at you because you get the tour. You know how that goes.
He's mad when you show up.
He's mad.
They're not all mad, but some of them are.
Some of them are mad.
And this is right at the same time as clubs are suffering. It's harder. Mm-hmm. It's harder for bands, regional bands, to tour, so they don't go to the clubs. The clubs are starting to fail. It's actually, there's kind of a sea change in the business where these house concerts are coming to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's people who play nothing but those things, and they might play 150 dates a year at those, and they do very well, and they're always booked. Mm-hmm. But so you tapped into that early.
Yeah, just early on. And I felt bad about it or embarrassed about it for a while until I like would read about an indie musician whose label is waiting to release their record, and they would do that to make some money in the meantime. I'm like, okay, well, that guy, I love this guy. He's doing it, then I'm okay. You know? So I just got over it. And then we become like really good friends.
Yeah, it's all fine unless you're the neighbor. Deal with
it's not like house loud, concert, though. It's like you're talking solo duo. It's not
I know. I've dealt with it. I live in the Jazz Fest neighborhood, and I've dealt with it. But it's all right until you're the neighbor.
Yeah. But we usually invite the neighbor.
There you go.
That's the number one rule.
There you go.
Well, what if the neighbor doesn't like it?
Well, we'll bake him a cake.
You're going to bake a cake?
I mean,
somebody will.
All right.
So you have your wife who winds up being a very accomplished classical piano Man. Player and good singer.
I mean, just,
so you guys like start operating as a duo, and
yeah.
you have a terrific act. I played one gig with you where we did a couple of sets mm-hmm. at Chicky Wawa. We had Eric Bolivar on drums and Papa mm-hmm. Molly on that set, and you and your wife, and I had a blast playing your music. And
I thought maybe you were bored. I couldn't tell. I'm you like, know. Man, this guy played with Big Star. He doesn't give a shit.
I didn't play with Big Star. I played with Alex Chilton.
Well, Alex Chilton, you know.
Like, but no. I just like to play, man. I like to play something that's interesting. And no, I dig your music, man. I wouldn't.
It's like I'm playing drum beats for this guy. He doesn't want to hear electronic beats.
No, look, as with you, every time I play, I'm present right there. We're doing this like it's the most important thing that we're ever going to do.
That's the same way I am. Like, I don't care if I'm playing in a living room or where.
If you don't treat it like that, you should not be doing this. This is not for you.
It's true.
So you guys continue to do this. I'm guessing that you have a full schedule this summer or plans anyway.
Not really
anyway.
Full. Like, I'm kind of dragging my feet this year.
Okay.
I am.
Why
I mean,
that?
We're going to do an East Coast tour. I don't know. I'm just overwhelmed, man.
Yeah.
Just with the noise in the world.
It's tough.
I'm really having a hard time.
But, just take a deep breath and push it all out of your mind. Just go back to the music.
I need to grind it out, but...
Man, well, you don't have to grind it out. It's supposed to be
supposed to be a
flow. Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a flow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're kind of reaching that point, huh, Manny?
Yeah, I think we're done. Yes.
Okay. Well, Luke,
done with me.
Thank you so much for coming down, and I'm glad we were able to get you on. Everybody, check out Dustin Luke's records under Luke. I'll put a link in the show notes to his Bandcamp page, and I'll have a couple of tracks in the podcast. You'll be able to hear. So, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends,
but the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.